Everybody, welcome to UGA Sports Live Podcast. My name is Roddy Nabulsi. I'm joined by Dane Young, Jake Roos, Dave Stats McMahon, and of course the Hall of Famer himself, Jim Donnan, former head coach of the University of Georgia Bulldogs. And this is your UGA Sports Live Podcast coming from Classic City Eat in Watkinsville. We're down right past the railroad tracks on Greensboro Highway. So if you go to downtown Watkinsville, you go past my wife's church. Drive over the railroad tracks and you'll see it. It's down on the right, has a little pond over here that's fantastic. Huge new complex, fantastic food. Some of the things you got so enamored with when they were Classic City Eats on Baxter Street, they brought them over here. Plus, they had a lot of new stuff. He's got this smoker in the back that is going to blow your mind when you get a chance. Swing by Classic City Eats. It's the best place you can get some food. Watch the games. There's 1,000 TVs on right now. Is that the Vanderbilt Spring
game? The Vanderbilt Spring game, man. I mean, I'd rather watch that, though, than Stewart Cink right there. I don't want to say Georgia Tech guy. But you know what? There's plenty of TVs here, and it's a pretty amazing place.
A nice bar with a game room. They're going to have a golf simulator here, so you can have your golf leagues here in the time. And when you bring your friends down, the huge game room for the kids. You can send them off while you have a few drinks here at the bar. We're actually sitting at the bar just out of happenstance because it has those nice outlets right underneath it, so you can plug your phone in, plug your computer in, do work. This is the ideal place for Jake Roos, who comes and does all, I think, writes 90% of his stories at a bar, if I'm not mistaken. So,
something like that.
I'm sorry, 95. My bad.
He calls it his home office.
Editors, okay? That's why we have editors.
Yeah. One crappy editor. We got a good one in Rob. So, but anyway, folks, we're talking about this. We saw the spring games up for Vandy. Georgia just had a spring game. I know that everybody wants to talk about that. I want to go straight to Dane because I think a lot of what everybody was watching, we wanted to watch the offensive line, we wanted to watch the defensive backs, but quarterbacks kind of stole the show. I was expecting, you know, just kind of a, with all the wideouts being injured, kind of a ground and pound game, you know, just give it to the backs up the middle, very vanilla, and let's not show anything, let's not get anybody hurt. They aired it out. 300 yards passing for JT Daniels, you know, Carson Beck shows out. Brock Vandegrift gets out there to a lot of cheers. We even saw, you know, a young Muschamp out there and Stetson Bennett. So give me your take on the quarterback there, Dane.
Well, you know, when Jake asked me at the end of last week's show what we were looking forward to most from G-Day, what player we were watching for, I said Carson Beck, because from what we had heard, his spring practice had been kind of a new level for him based on where he was last year. And it sounds like from what Kirby Smart said that he took some of those reps that JT Daniels was getting on the scout team late in the season last year, and that kind of springboarded him to be better off. So I want to begin this whole conversation. This is not a quarterback controversy thing. JT Daniels is the starter. Kirby has named him the starter. He has earned that spot. He should be. He's the best chance that Georgia has to win. However, it is football, and you see it every year where a talented player gets injured, and then you have to see what your options are next. It's a pretty fascinating discussion when you look at the crop of guys behind him, because I think all three do some things better than the other two. Stetson Bennett has the experience. He would know the offense best. He could probably get players in the best position to highlight what their skills are. Carson Beck, all the different throwing angles. He's a little bit mobile as well in terms of like moving around the pocket and extending plays. But I think the quarterback on the roster with the best tools overall, and he is so raw, so I want to really iterate that. I think Brock Vandegrift has the most talent of any quarterback on the roster, and I include JT Daniels with that. I don't think Brock is ready to play in the SEC just yet, and I don't think you want him to be ready to play in the SEC just yet, because I don't think that would go very well. But what I'm telling you is, if something were to happen to JT Daniels, the question you have to ask yourself is, can Stetson Bennett or Carson Beck lead Georgia's offense well enough that they could win a title? Essentially saying, could they beat Alabama? I'm not so sure. And then, so if that's the case, you look at how do you project to the future and getting Brock Vandegrift ready to do that. That's why I think, maybe not immediately because he is so young and he's got to learn the offense, I think by the end of the season, Brock Vandegrift will be the number two quarterback.
Ain't going to do the show with a red bullet wig on next week, I think, maybe.
Here's the thing about offensive football. One of the things you want to do is make sure you're productive in your attack, and also that you've got a versatile attack, and in today's game, you got to score points. And we've got a huge volume of offense right now. I mean, even though Saturday was they probably contained it, you look at over the last season, as the season progressed, how much more shifting we did, how much more wide out we use with no backs and things like that. So you've got a guy with a pro background that's got that whole catalog of plays that he can draw on, and Todd Monken. So I think the main thing there would be who can come in and do what your first team quarterback's doing without hurting yourself as far as what he understands. And I think being fair to Brock right now, that's a whole lot of stuff they've thrown at him, you know, right off the bat. But the other two have had a lot more meetings, a lot more practice time, everything, so they know what to do. Bennett brings you a guy, like you said, that can get you through the game, and he's very effective. He can throw the ball down the field. He can, you know, people say, well, he threw that pick. Well, those 60 yards down the field, who cares? Those don't bother. Over the middle, short are the ones. But I think that's going to be something that plays out in the spring. Throughout the rest of the spring, summer camp, 7-on-7, and we'll see how these guys develop. My overview on the spring game in a one-minute summary here would be, we look pretty good considering we didn't have our two best players. Number one, Nakobe Dean's our best player on defense. Number one, our best player on offense is George Pickens, as far as just superstar-type guys. So then you take probably your next four best receivers didn't play from a standpoint of Burton. Arian Smith was out there, Dom Blaylock and Rosemary St. Jacks. So with that said, we were still able to move the ball and do a lot of things, but you got to temper that a little bit. Our second team secondary is not going to be the kind our team's going to play against this year. So you're going to get a lot of yards on them. First team secondary had some real good moments, and their pressure was good. And that's what we're going to have to rely on, the pressure up front to help them out a little bit. But we won't be playing a team that throws the ball every down like we did in the spring game. And the reason Kirby did that, open field plays are a lot easier to keep from getting big injuries as compared to running the ball and smashing it up there and piling it up. So they wanted to look at that, and that's what they did. So I would say from a one-time shot looking at them Saturday, our 85 players stack up with any 85 in the country depth-wise. Our premier players right now still got to see how those guys focus, how they come out. You know, how does Nakobe come around? How do these five-star linemen develop? How do these backs run behind an inexperienced offensive line? Because we got backs, and McIntosh wasn't even out there. That's another guy that I think does a lot of things. So if I had to say about how I feel about after Saturday, I feel a lot better from a standpoint of our lesser players look better to me than any time George has been out there. I mean, I'm talking about our guys that are second and third team guys. I mean, that second team O-line, come on.
I like when you say lesser players, that'd be like lesser players for George is basically like great players for other teams.
I'm talking about the guys that weren't starting that were out there. Ringo, Broderick Jones, Amarius Mims. Just go down through the list and Munden. I mean, just some athletic looking guys, and people accuse me of being a homer or anything you want to, but I'm a realist. We got talent.
Well, and, you know, some people are concerned about Georgia's offensive line, but the thing I would say is the best thing that they're doing is going against Georgia's defensive line in practices, because, whoo, man, that it's defensive line is the strength of the team.
It's not a finished product by any means, but they've got 5 months here of working out 7-on-7. When the team's doing 7-on-7, they're doing pass rush drills. And here's the other thing I'd take up for the offensive line. Without the threat of the run and those guys just putting their head down, you know, just coming in and rushing a passer every down, they weren't worried about defending the run. I mean, those defensive coaches weren't, you know, in their game plan, look, I'm just going to tell you right now, we're not going to have to worry about the run. So you guys going out there and get the hell out of the passion. And, you know, but don't tell Kirby I told you. Those guys were rushing the passer without any fear of the run. So it's hard to protect. But for the most part, we had pretty good protection. And people say, well, this guy got beat one-on-one. I saw Andrew Thomas get beat one-on-one here. I mean, you know, that happens. So same thing with receivers and all. So to me, the glass is more than half full here. It's not a lot more half full than it is less empty.
Coach, we talked a lot about how much passing there was. You know, like Roddy said, I was kind of expecting sort of ground and pound. Were you surprised with how much they decided to air it out on Saturday?
Yeah, I was surprised, first of all, that they played JT as much. I don't know if they were worried about Stetson going in there and setting things on fire or what, but they played him a lot. And, you know, Stetson went in there 3 for 3, moving right down the field. He only played about 6 plays. But, you know, they know what he can do, and they know what they got to get Vandergrift ready. And Beck gave him a lot of reps. But he was going against the twos, kind of like the spring game that Jake Fromm had his freshman year, you know, when he went out there against the second team and third team. He lit it up, and he continued to light it up after his freshman year. So we got a good future here with this team. And I think the reason we're going to be better offensively than we showed Saturday is the threat of the run is going to be enhance our play action passing game. I mean, Milton was overbearing out there the way he looked. Washington on the outside, Bowers as a guy that can do a lot of different things. And then Mitchell, even though he's a fifth or sixth guy right now, I mean, he came out there and made a catch that not many people make as a true freshman, catching the ball in the seam and extending his arms at the last second. That's hard to teach. You know, a lot of guys sometimes will run with their arms out and then you don't get to the ball. If you run to the last second and then extend, it's a normal move to get there and then extend. And he did that perfectly, and JT laid it in there. But I was impressed with the way the defense can run, though, and swarm the ball. I thought that was good. And, of course, our kicking game is going to be a real threat, too.
Jake, in just a second, I want to ask you about Kendall Milton because I was very impressed with him. And, of course, Mitchell, too. You know, he showed a lot of potential. And, again, we didn't know a whole lot about Marcus Rugby Jack Saint last year, but then towards midseason he came on. So maybe Mitchell gets that same ability. But watching Dominic Blaylock on the sideline, you know, wait for him to come back. Here's Jackson with a crazy catch in the end zone there over in Latavius Brinney. But to me, the guy that kind of stood out, the one that, as Coach always says, his mouth-watering player to me was Kendall Milton. And I'll ask you about him real quick. But I do want to let people know about something special that's coming to our friends over at Athens Ford on May 10th at 10 o'clock Eastern. They are having a bunch of the Broncos come out to the new Ford Bronco. You know, I know people have been trying to see it. People have been pre-ordering them. It's tough to go by a Ford dealership and actually find these things because so many of them are spoken for before they're actually produced. But they're having a Meet the Broncos event out at Athens Ford on May 10th. So it's coming up in just a few weeks. Go out there and I think exactly 3 weeks, I believe, from yesterday. So swing out by Athens Ford and check out the Meet the Broncos event. You can open them up, check them out, see all the stuff. I will definitely be there because these things are amazing looking. So if you get a chance, check out the Broncos there. And, of course, remember anything you get from Athens Ford, you know, they're a big sponsor of our show and our website. But anything you buy from there, any of the new vehicles will have a lifetime powertrain warranty. The experience will be fantastic. You can actually sell your car online to them. You don't even have to go in. You can actually look at them online. You can actually have one of the sales folks, people walk around, put you on FaceTime or put you on Zoom, something like that, walk around the vehicle, check it out. They will deliver it to your house if you want to do a test drive. So ridiculous customer service and a great event coming up, their Meet the Broncos event. And if you're on that side of town and you're before you get down past the mall, swing by our friends at Academia Brewing Company. They have some of the best food you can get in town, tons of new beers, and I think today they said the weather's supposed to be at 10 out of 10 on the, what is it, Mellish meter? I can't remember whatever the guy says, you know, but it's supposed to be fantastic weather today. And it's beautiful. It's going to be great all week. If you get a chance and you want to sit outside, if you're not being killed by the pollen, check out their beer garden. It's a great place to sit outside. Vegetation everywhere, great bars, great service, and beers that you can't get anywhere else. Some award-winning beers that everybody's trying out. Plus fantastic food, real-life chef. You know, it's not just a, hey, we have a brewery. come get your fried peanuts chicken wings and peanuts and stuff like that. You know, you, it's actually, it would be successful as a restaurant. It would be successful as a brewery. They do both, and they have some of the best ambiance. They're expanding over there left and right. So when you get a chance, swing by our friends at Academia Brewing Company and grab a beer or six.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about Academia is it's like there's so many different places to sit, and it's like five different restaurants in one. There's that back room that we did the show a couple of times. Yeah. That is for private parties, it's amazing. There's those couches there.
The lounge.
You just chill out and have a good time. There's the bar. There's the beer garden. There's like
the five restaurants.
It's five restaurants in one.
Absolutely. But Jake, give me your thoughts on Kendall Milton.
Well, yeah, I like you said. I mean, mouth-watering player, right? I think that what you saw from Kendall Milton is what you had always hoped Kendall Milton would be. It's why he earned his 5-star ranking. I mean, just a battering ram of a kid, right? You know, got the size, obviously has the power to make all the plays. And I'll tell you this: I'll go out on a little bit of a limb here, as Dane did talking about Brock Vandegrift. I think that by the end of the season, he's going to be the guy. I think that Kendall Milton is going to get the bulk of the carries. I think that it just makes sense personally. Listen, Zamir White has obviously earned his stripes and put in his time. He'll get his fair share. I think the same is true of James Cook. But for me, if you need a guy to go down there and get you, you know, those hard yards, right now I'm looking at Kendall Milton, and I see that as his, what he's able to do. He's also able to pop one, you know, for 20, 30 yards, no problem. So, you know, I think that this is going to be, I think we got some insight into it last year. We got another brief look at it on G-Day. I think that 2021, a huge season on tap for Kendall Milton, a coming out party, and a guy who SEC defenses better get ready to know in a big way.
Bold prediction there. I was kind of thinking Kenny McIntosh is going to have a lot to say about this. James Cook, you know, with his ability to catch the ball. But if I'm looking at the stats right, who led the black team in receiving?
Kendall Milton.
Yeah. How many passes did they throw to the running backs?
I think 22 – I believe it was 22 receptions, and last year they caught 34 total. So,
it's both sides.
And this is something that, like you said, there's so many good running backs. Find a way to get them the ball in any different ways, and throwing to the backfield, that's a great weapon to have.
Well, and Coach's point, though, the reason that happened in G-Day is because they didn't want to get people injured, and that's a pretty easy pass for quarterbacks to make.
That's
to
also what a lot of what's a trend now, not just in G-Day, but it's a trend also what's going on in college and pro football.
And the defense played more zone than they normally do, so that attributes because of the inexperience at corner. So that attributes a lot to throwing the ball underneath. And it's something that they looked at in the off season and their cutups. Watch everything that you know. Hey, we got to take advantage of this. We got to get the ball to these guys in space. And one thing I would say to add on to what Jake said, usually when you got four or five guys playing at one position, it's because you're looking and searching for somebody to get in there and do something. And each one has a skill set. But boy, I'm just telling you right now, these guys can play for anybody, all five of them, including Edwards. So that's a good point there. We got more depth at that position than anyone on our team, and quality depth, quality starting depth that will help you over the course of the season, because the backs are going to get dinged up. They're going to, you know, things are going to happen to them. But it's going to be interesting to see how Todd Monken puts this offense together, knowing that it's very comforting to know you can run the ball for 4 yards. Because if you can do that in this league and the other team can't stop the run, they're going to have a hard time stopping the pass because they got to commit to the run. And he'll be patient enough to use that, and it'll help our line and the protection too, because the threat of the run really enhances. And the one thing we didn't show Saturday that I think will be a big part, because JT's good at it, is the RPO, where you call a run, and then if it's not there, you throw the ball. So we didn't do any of that much Saturday. It's mostly just play action or drop back. But those RPOs are deadly. I mean, it really pisses Nick Saban off every time somebody asks him about it, you know. But it's a good rule for a college offense. I mean, the lineman can be down the field three yards. And how does the defense read that? So I think that's the number one reason our offense will be enhanced, is we'll be able to run the ball more readily than we were last year. And our passing game has developed where it was doing good last year with JT there, 300 yards a game, but you combine the two together and then you add those tight ends.
That's where I was going to go next, Coach, because we can kind of read too much into a spring game. And you talk about the reason, you know, Georgia was maybe throwing to the running backs a bit more because of the zone. Again, as Dane pointed out, hey, safety, handing the ball to James Cook up the middle, there's some pretty big hits in there. Let's just maybe keep the ball in the air a little bit, keep guys safe. But can we read anything into the number of passes to the tight end? You had a lot of wide receivers out, so, of course, it's a logical next step for them to use the tight ends more. But are we reading too much into it, or can we – maybe was this a little preview?
I think it's a combination of both. First of all, you got to make up for the fact that you don't want to go out there and throw 50 balls to a walk-on that's not going to play much. I mean, so what if the same thing happened and we were down these guys, what can we do to run the same formations but with different personnel? So we were in 3-by-1, but if you just remember, usually when you're in 3-by-1, three receivers on one side, one receiver on the other, the tight end is the inside receiver on the three receiver side. But because we didn't have that many receivers, they went what we call trips, which usually the tight end is on the weak side tight. So three receivers to the field and the tight end tight. But instead of him lining up tight, he moved out to the outside, either Bowers or Washington, and you still give the same look of 3-by-1, but the tight end is now on the weak side. And he's the wide guy, but he's good enough to split out, kind of like Gronkowski or any of those pro guys, that he gives the semblance of lining up tight and shifting out or just moving out there. And they got to declare where they're going to put their corners. Are they going to put them over on the strong side, or are they going to put them on the weak side? And if they do, then you got the strong safety over there on them, who, you know, Washington's big enough and he's fast enough to get away from them. But Bowers is clearly fast enough to outrun those strong safeties if they get over there. So that gives you a real weapon on the one receiver side that you lose with Pickens, but maybe pick it up a little bit with this guy, these two, and with Burton.
Coach, cover up your microphone, sir.
When Burton comes back, he'll be out there. You know, Roseby will be out there, but you can still get to that formation. So if everybody understands, if you go 3-by-1 regular people in there, the tight ends and the inside guy on the three side. But if you go 3-by-1 with maybe two tight ends, you could have a tight end on that side, and then the one on the weak side would split out.
And that's how Darnell Washington ended up across from Lavoisier Carroll.
That would have been.
I don't care who he ends up across. I mean, I was going to ask Coach. Coach, you coached at the highest level. I mean, how do you game plan to try to stop a guy like that? What can you do?
Well, you know, first of all, he's improved his ball skills and route running, no question about it. I mean, he was just an overpowering force in high school. You went out to Vegas and you told me when you were out there and when you weren't in the casinos, when you went to watch him, that he really was an overpowering force. So the thing about it is, you know, this is such a cliche-ridden thing, a matchup nightmare. What is a matchup nightmare? You're out there, and then all of a sudden you have a bad dream or something. It's just a situation where it's hard to put a real true corner on him and give up something to the field on the slot receiver. So do you put a corner over there and try to cover him and hope that he doesn't just knock you around blocking you? Or do you put a safety over there and you do a pretty good job stopping the run, but then he's going to beat you deep? So it is a matchup situation there that causes you a lot of concern. But I think the big thing there to me is Bowers is more of a matchup problem from the standpoint of stopping the pass because he's so fast. I mean, the guy is lightning fast for 6'3" and a half, 230, 235. I mean, he's got unbelievable speed for me, and I think that's going to be good. And Washington's going to be – and Fitzpatrick looked good blocking and running routes.
He's so big now. Oh, my God.
We're in good shape at tight end. We're in real good shape.
Coach, do you think just because you've had so many issues with the wide receivers, can you – you talk about how fast Brock Bowers is. Can you just kind of convert him to a wide receiver? Is that
I think what you would, I think what you would do there is just the same thing. If you're a coach and you want to run these formations, you can run them kind of like LSU did and just have a hybrid guy that can line up and play inside and outside. When we were here, we had a guy like Robert Edwards where we could shift him out to the one receiver side and he would be on the weak side, and we could do that without taking away from our running game, you know, because Robert could do that. So as an offensive coach, you want to run those formations, but you don't have the luxury of having three or four wide receivers. So let's do it with two tight ends, or let's do it with two backs, put Cook out there, which they've done. You know, Cook can play wide, and even a couple of times at Saturday we saw White get out there, and for sure last year we had McIntosh. And I think the one thing that I'm going to hit from a coaching standpoint and philosophical, if that guy can line up out there and make you declare with your check that you're playing this coverage and then move back to the backfield and be in a regular running set, what are you going to do? Are you going to check again? If you check again, then you maybe confuse the defense. So as good as it is for him to be able to shift out and catch the ball, it's even better they can line up there and they'd be worried about him and put an extra defender in the game, and then you move him back and then you run the ball. You understand that?
I love it. Not that much.
Yeah. anytime you make the defense uncomfortable and not sure what they're doing, it's definitely an advantage for that offense.
Yeah, I mean, you pointed out with James Cook last year against Alabama. I think that was the best example I'd heard, and it came through for me when you pointed that out. I was like, oh my God, I was sitting next to you and I missed it. So
a two tight end.
I appreciate that. And again, I was
a two tight end set that contains Brock Bowers and Darnell Washington. That's going to create a lot of mismatches, I think, for anybody with just having just the athleticism, the size, everything those two guys bring.
Well, and then what Coach is saying is if you have that, but then you also have a James Cook who could run out and play at wide receiver or come back in and be a running back, I mean, then you just have so many options, and that's how you end up with what LSU had with Clyde Edwards-Helaire or what Alabama was able to do with Najee Harris. I mean, that's Irv Smith.
Let's just have a little football 101 real quickly on what he just said about two tight ends, and people call that 12 personnel, two tight ends, one back, two wide receivers.
One back.
Now, when you come out of the backfield, you can be balanced and have two tight ends, one on each side, three linemen there, you know, on each side, guard tight end. Just think about these two fists in the center in the middle, two wide receivers out there, all right? Then the next thing you do is take one of the wide receivers and put him to the field. Now you got three receivers, a tight end, and a tight end on the weak side. Then the next thing you do is move that tight end out, and now you've got a three by. Then the next thing you do is you take – says my internet's unstable. Are you still got me?
Yeah, we got you.
The last thing you do is you – like Brock Bowers, and before the snap, back him up a step, put him in motion to the tight end side, and now you got a wing over there where you can run a ball or you can let him come and kick out, kind of like Trey McKee last year, at the side defensive player. So if you got two guys that are capable of that, and we saw Darnell last year, he got in the game. Early on, he was playing with Fitzpatrick. He was the wing. That was a wing tight end combination. So Bowers is going to be that same kind of guy this year, but Darnell can do both. So as a conservative coach, not necessarily me, but I'm talking about any guy, if you want to just run the ball and throw it, with our lack of receivers right now, that could be pretty golden, because you still can have more formations, but you're getting your best players on the field.
I think that's a great point. I think Jake kind of hit it when he talked about, you know, maybe what James Cook could do, you know, that ability there. Kenny McIntosh can do that. You know, and then we know that Ryan Fitzpatrick, who, by the way, is really yoked up, that he's a lot bigger than when he first got here. He has to put on 30, 40 pounds. It's he's much bigger. But we know he can catch. So what I like is the fact that when you're bringing in these other personnel, you're not telegraphing what's going to happen. And that's not to bang on any former players, but sometimes if a certain running back was in the game, you knew they weren't going to throw to him, or it'd be very rare. You know, I remember we'd write a story about this is only his third catch in his career.
And it'd be game 15 or 16.
Yeah, you know, as he was like, oh, well, he's a junior, yeah. You know, and it's like, oh, he saw three passes all the time. You know he's not a threat out there, but the fact that you can do that with multiple personnel, it's like, okay, yeah, you think Fitzpatrick's in game, he's going to be – he's an inline guy, he's tight, he's just there to block. He can peel off catch pass, you know, and same with – if you look in the backfield, you're like, well, that's Kendall Milton. He's a between-the-tackles runner. Well, he had five passes caught in the game, so – I like the fact that you're not tipping your hand there, and I think that's going to be a – you talk about that chess game and the checkdowns, especially when you have a smart quarterback. I really like that.
And we got the threat of the checkdown to Bowers and Washington there too with the – but one quick story just reminded me about coaching. We played this one team that would always take this one guy, and he would just split him out really wide, almost out of bounds. And, you know, thinking that, you know, you got to go out there and cover him. And one of our coaches came up with what we called an OJ call, which was for OJ Simpson. And it meant that they were going to run the ball. And so anytime that guy lined up, we would just say OJ. And we would just go out there, like 5 yards inside him, line up inside and still play the run. And it held up 100%. So that was the old OJ call.
That's a pretty killer call.
Oh, you set him up. You knew it was
good. Well, talk about a setup. If you got a chance and you're trying to figure out what you want to do for lunch today, go on the YourPie app, the app you get down on your phone. Today is Tuesdays are double points day. You really want to check that out. You know, I'm not saying you can't order from them any time of the week, you know, but Tuesdays is really good. And right now they have a barbecue chicken bacon ranch pizza. It's one of their specialty pizzas. You know, they've done some fantastic ones. I've seen the test kitchen where they do these. You know, they try out these new menu items. And when you basically have people just craving it and raving about it, you know, like the pizza prosciutto that I thought was crazy that everybody loves, you know, the hot honey drizzle that they had recently, you know, the Mike's Hot Honey Drizzle pizza.
Well, they have an annual competition too, where they have their franchisees try out different recipes and see if they can become one of the seasonal ones.
Yeah. So whoever came up with the barbecue chicken bacon ranch pizza, give that person an award. That it is a killer pizza. And if you order it today on a Tuesday, you'll get double points. And I tell
double
you,
double point Tuesday.
Those points rack up really fast. I'm not just saying that because I eat there all the time. I bet people said, look, I've done two orders, now I got a free pizza.
You know? You get, like, free things, like, so super quickly. Yeah. And I noticed they had another free limited time item right there.
They might have a gelato that you like. It is a key lime cream pie gelato. And everybody that follows me on Twitter knows I have a weakness for a key lime pie. That is all forever. You know, it's just the whole idea of it is I love key lime pie. It's my absolute kryptonite. And now they have a key lime cream pie gelato at all the YourPie locations. Try it out. It's fantastic. Of course, you can also go in there and get beer. They are big on bringing in local breweries. So no matter what state you're in, no matter what part of that state you're in, if there is a brewery within 200-300 miles of you, it's very likely that when you go into your local YourPie that they will have local beers for you, not just the standards, because they like to be a part of the community. They do a ton of charity nights, you know, where they a certain percentage of that night's proceeds.
All right. Well, Roddy's frozen, so that's great. That's enough of that.
Anyway. Go to the local schools, go to the local charity events, our community, and we appreciate that. And speaking of giving back to the community, our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors are big in taking care of their community. They've done a ton for the North Georgia area. Each year they go out and take care of anybody who has they have their operators and their install guys, you know, and their repair guys come out and say, hey, look, I found this person that needs some help. And they look at them case by case. And then at the end of the year, they actually will go in and help somebody out. So Ryan Lucia, huge, huge guy who likes to give back to his community, but it's based on their customer service approach. That's what they do when they try to take care of you when you call them up and say, hey, I need a new garage door. My garage door needs to be repaired. I need a new opener. I need the glass replaced. Whatever it be, hey, it's going up 3 feet and sticking, or like here at Classic City East, they put in a garage door behind us, you know, so they can open up and go out to the patio. If you have commercial work, you have a receiving dock that you need work done on, just check out our friends at Air and Overhead Doors. They will take care of you. And again, it's that that commitment to customer service, that commitment to community that makes them such a well-respected and well-liked organization. Again, you know, if they weren't doing it in garage doors, they'd be doing community service and something else, you know. So we, it just happens to be Ryan Lucia's niche, and we appreciate their sponsorship of this show and our podcast.
Hey, playing off the tight end thing real fast, Jake, I had a question for you, because in my youth, I kind of felt like all the tight ends kind of looked the same. They had the big neck roll. Maybe you could toss them a pass within 10 yards, but they were really out there to block. And that seems to have changed, where there's so many different kinds of tight ends and they can do different things. And I think this is a decent, like, where is football with tight ends discussion, especially when you think about Kyle Pitts and a potential top five pick in the NFL draft, because that guy is no traditional tight end, but he's still listed as a tight end. Have you seen in recruiting just a different perception of what tight ends can do at the prep level and then kind of where they project to college?
Well, I mean, I'll say this about that. I think guys like Eric Gilbert and Darnell Washington are few and far between. Everybody would love to have a guy like that. Everybody's trying to find a guy like that, but there just aren't a lot of guys that are built that way that can move in those ways either. So I think that you are seeing the game shift that way. I think that you're seeing guys, you know, take up that position, whereas maybe in the past that was sort of it certainly was not a glamour position to be a tight end, but suddenly you're seeing this emergence through how they're being able to be used, all the different ways. Like you said, Kyle Pitts now probably a top five pick in the NFL. I think that you're going to continue to see that trend go that way. There's no going back from it. I mean, we're not going back to a guy who's just a blocker out there. If you can't do it all, you're probably not going to have a spot. But like I said, the physical freaks are freaks for a reason. So a little tougher to find those guys.
The other thing that's happened with the tight ends is the fact that these high school programs are developing such good passing games with the 7-on-7 all summer. And because of that, you have to utilize the tight ends with the rules. You got to have, you know, you can only have so many players out there and they got to be a certain position. So it really is good for these guys to catch the ball and get a chance to hone their skills. So they come in here a lot better off showing their receiving skills. And sometimes a kid doesn't want to play tight end in high school because all they do is block. And now some of these athletic guys that are big say, hey, look, there's a good position for me. I can get in there and still get the ball. And so I think we're just seeing more guys play tight that have some athletic skills.
They want the ball. And what I like is the fact that Darnell Washington is like number 0 or 0 or whatever you want to call it. It looks like a target. Like when you throw it to him, it's like, hey, put a little circle in the middle thing. It's a target right for him.
Yeah, when back in the day, you basically took your big guys who couldn't block and who couldn't catch, and you made them tight ends.
That's exactly what you did.
It's a big body. It can't play on the line. You move them into this spot. It's like, you hope that he can catch a 5-yard curl route on a third down, third and short, you know, because no one's going to cover him. But you're taking your game in hand by throwing to some of these guys. But now we go to camps and we see, especially with the rivals camps, which one's coming to Atlanta this Sunday. So we're going to have a lot of great coverage for you. And you see the just amount of, to answer Dave's question, the coaching that these guys are getting at the prep level is night and day from when we were growing up. I mean, it was basically like when you had a guy, you would just kind of relegate him to fullback, you know, wasn't fast enough to be a tailback, you know, but good hitter, lead block, you know, but just couldn't do a whole lot. So it wasn't a specialty position. It didn't, tight end was kind of an afterthought. But now, you know, I think guys are placing a premium on that. The big guys that can run, that can catch, you're looking for them. And there's a place for them in college where before, I think it was kind of an afterthought.
It's a small sample size, but I don't think Amarius Mims has a future as a tight end off of the one play.
One game, one reception. That's all you need to know right there.
That was a 2-point conversion, no reception.
We're going to come out with Mims a tight end and Jalen Carter on the wing. Yeah. Another guy played tight end in high school.
Yeah, no question.
Let's get talking a little bit about defense here. Come on, we've killed this offense, but I was really
I was go ahead, Coach. I was just about to ask you about him.
defensive front certainly has a lot of potential. And I was glad to see Walker get extended play. It's no question that this guy is a big physical person in open field, and Tindall's got a role. But overall, we need help in the secondary. I mean, we got to get another corner as a transfer, just from experience standpoint. But we can get by for sure. But I mean, if you're going to be play the kind of coverage he likes to play and Lanning likes to call, and which is based a lot on man coverage, we don't have a lot of good man cover guys right now. That's just reality here. They were going against the kind of receivers they're going to see from Alabama and Clemson. Although if our first line guys were out there, they would, you know what I mean? I mean, they were going against a true freshman that had been here three weeks of spring practice in Mitchell. So I think our secondary has got some really good young talent, but we're going to have to develop there. There's no question at star, at corner of safety, we're okay, but we got to get some help there.
How big do you feel now about, after watching what you saw Saturday, the addition of Tyke Smith, an experienced guy at that star position?
Huge. Just even for depth, can't start. He can, you can still play dime with him. You know, he could play the dime guy, and Breeny can play the safety. But we got, there's no question Kirby's thinking ahead with him. And I think Ringo is going to really continue to flourish. I mean, he missed 2 weeks contact with a concussion, but he's definitely, he looks like an outside out there. I mean, he's big, physical, and Kimber was solid. There's no question about that. And speed, really didn't have a lot of balls thrown his way, but he's experienced. But we don't have anybody that lines up right there like Tyson Campbell or Stokes at this point.
It's good to see Stokes come back and taking the game. But I want to get your thoughts on Javon Bullard, just because from a statistical point, I think he led the team in tackles at 7. We just haven't heard his name a whole lot out there. What did you think of Javon Bullard?
Well, you don't want your secondary leading your team in tackles. I mean, not being negative, but
no, he's a good player.
He's a solid player. I mean, he's going to get better. I mean, he's just only been around here for a little while, but
that's true.
There's good reason to recruit him. I think he's got a lot of potential, and I was glad to see him be successful. As far as, you know, Kirby said last week that our tackling wasn't that great the second scrimmage, and I think they made some improvement. But here's the thing about tackling. The way they got the rules now in spring practice, which I think is good, you know, to avoid the concussions, because I don't know if the fans realize it a lot, but you got a lot more concussions in spring practice than you did in fall, because the teams were a little bit more inclined to have contact, knowing they had all summer if guys got hurt to play. And once the season starts, you don't really preseason, you don't tackle a lot. So, but the trainers and the coaches came up with the idea we're going to limit the tackling in the spring and try to limit the concussions. And so by limiting it, you don't have as many full-speed hits, but at the same time, you're not quite as good at your technique or tackling people. So I think that's a give-and-take situation. But we've always been a good open-field tackling team. We do a good job with it. I'm not worried about that.
I wrote this in my most revealing plays of G-Day article on UGASports.com, but the thing that I think can help Georgia's secondary as it grows through the season is a defensive front that can get pressure with as few guys as possible. 3 guys on some occasions, 4 or 5. Georgia's defensive front is really, 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 really good, and you saw them make plays both in the little bit of run defense, but especially in the pass rush and then deflecting passes. That's Georgia's strength. Georgia's going to have to rely on that, and if they can get pressure with 4, that allows more guys to drop back, and then at that point you're mainly worried about not getting beat over the top.
And I like what you said about pressure, and like obviously one of the biggest results you want to have is a sack, or I mean definitely you want a turnover, but a sack. But I mean, I think the pressure is just as important, because if you're making the quarterback uncomfortable or he's just throwing away, that'll give the secondary chance to make big plays. And it's not always the sack. I mean, you looked at our stats recently, like in previous years, so many more pressures than previous years.
Havoc plays.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'm glad Coach mentioned Quay Walker as well, because I'll tell you, in terms of physical changes, he may have had the most noticeable one that I saw. He looks like he's put on some great weight, been hitting the weight room hard, eating some mayonnaise sandwiches, putting on the pounds. So good to see Quay Walker out there. You know, he's always been a long kind of spindly guy, but I think that you saw him kind of really start to put on some weight, looking a little bit closer to Adam Anderson than he did last season.
Wow.
Right. Channing Tindall, too. Did you notice that?
Channing Tindall's always juiced, though, man. I mean, he's
a big that dude. First play with a little dump out to James Cook, he read that instantaneously. I was pointing it out to my son who went to the game with me. I said, watch this replay. He analyzed this instantaneously. He knows what the play is and takes off like a shot. He met James at the line of scrimmage and just rolled him up. And I said, it's almost like they had telegraphed it. So, but when Channing came barreling down, it was like somebody's going to get hurt because he's a big old boy.
He did that a lot last year, too.
Yeah, he did.
So we'll find a little more.
All of a sudden, you're going to have, once we get back in the fall, you're going to have N'Kobe Dean. You're going to have Sorry, who didn't play out there. I mean, you got MJ Sherman coming around. I mean, that linebacker group, solid.
Rion Davis played really well, too, for the second team.
He's good. I mean, and then Munden, I mean, come on.
Definitely want to see more of him. So, as you were saying, there's a lot of talent out there. I was one guy that kind of stood out to me, Coach. And again, we're way down into the weeds of the depth chart here. One guy I saw coming in, that, as Dave was talking about, putting pressure on the quarterback was Chaz Chambliss, just coming around and having to be picked up by a tight end, having to be picked up by a running back. They just seemed to just, every play was go get him. And that guy's a lot faster than I expected.
The thing about Chaz, I mean, he's not as big as Josh Millard, but just the same kind of guy that we had here. We used to call Millard the demon because he just played every play relentless. And Chaz is the same way. He just won't be denied. And, you know, his effort is just overwhelming to go with. He's a weight room guy that really is outstanding, has a lot of good weight already as a true freshman. And I think he'll continue to flourish and be a guy that you can use as he gets a little bit bigger to stop the run. But just fresh guy to go in there and rush the passer. I mean, a lot like Watt, you know, J.J. Watt's brother that played for Phillipsburg. You know, he was J.J., but this comes in there and just will not be denied. I mean, might not get to the passer, but just keeps on working. And, you know, when we signed him, Dan Lanning just told me, he said, you watch the tape on this guy, Coach. He said, he's all over the field every down.
He was.
He's just a reckless, abandoned type player. And, you know, that's the kind of effort you want.
He's anything like Josh Millard. I mean, Georgia fans are sure would love that. I mean, he was a big-time fan favorite, and he produced.
Yeah. Now, what I've noticed about him, because I was taking pictures there, was he was in just about every frame, dips his shoulders to get the quarterbacks. And, you know, the quarterbacks are taking their drop, and they have to cut it short because he's right there. And there are a couple times that he did not get credited for a sack. And I noticed that Kirby Smart was saying, look, all these stats and all the passing game efficiency or passing game commentary that you guys want to make, and you talk about the quarterbacks, it's tough to gauge what happened for this real contact. You know, the quarterbacks get a little more leeway because you're not allowed to hit them, and guys know they're not supposed to hit them. So, how disruptive would he have been had it been a real game? And I noticed he was very hard to block. So again, I know we're kind of down in the weeds, and there's a lot of guys that will get the field before him. But for somebody like myself who see this kid, he's jacked up. You know, he's got the veins everywhere. He does look like, as you say, it's obvious that he is a weight room guy. But a lot of times those weight room guys don't have the speed to get there and disrupt the play. But Chaz Chambliss did. And so he just kind of stood out to me because as I was going through the photos, he was in every one of them, from the right, from the left. He's just repeatedly. So
here's the thing about that right now that I think the fans need to realize.
What a cliffhanger.
I agree.
Coach, you cut out right after you said, well, here's what the fans need to realize. And we just got up. We're like, oh, wait, where'd he go? So please repeat that if you would.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it. And here's the other thing that I want to give our team credit for, that all these and everybody's pretty objective, I'm sure. I haven't read the analyzation that people have of the game on the dog venery.
You didn't read mine? You should have read mine.
I read yours. I don't consider that a dog. I read those as things. And I thought you did a good job on those quarterback and those plays you showed too. But I will say this. When you think about the fact that this was the third scrimmage that this team had, 50% of these guys are freshmen and sophomores. Some of them, 16 of them, was the third time they've been in a full contact practice at Georgia out of 15 practices. So the finished product, sure, it doesn't look great, but I'm going to tell you what it did look like. It looked like an organized football team that knew what they wanted to do, that liked to play football, that enjoyed being in Sanford Stadium and couldn't wait to get out there and show what they could do. They didn't play sloppy. They didn't fumble the ball. They didn't have any late hits. You didn't see a lot of cheap shot clips and things like that. They looked like a team that knew what they were doing, and that's all you can ask. Now you got 5 months to get it going, and then people can critique the dog shit out of them.
That's correct. It did look like a team, though, that was giving each other hell every time they scored, because you would watch, you know, I'd see Clay Webb go up after his team had punched one in. He's standing there, they're getting ready to do the point after, and he's just talking to the guys on the other side. And,
well, let me tell you,
like Owen Condon's cracking up, and they're all just giving each other hell both ways, you know. And they look like they were having fun. They really did.
I want to interrupt you here, and then I'm not going to say anything else. The reason is last night they had the G-Day dinner. The winning team got steak, lobster, wings, you name it, in the indoor facility. The losing team, the black team, got beanie weenies.
That's a great tradition.
So you're sitting over there eating that, and your buddies that just whipped your butt on the last play of the game are eating like a coup de grace there. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's why they're getting on each other. They're playing.
That's why it was all the linemen that were talking all that crap. Yep.
They like their steak and lobster.
They want those beanie weenies, man. And the coaches, too. The coaches, trainers, managers, they always have – they got to do it, too.
Yeah, that's why Kirby's right in the middle, because you could choose.
The problem is you got those country-ass boys that get down with the beanie weenies, man. They're like, oh, hell yeah, all right. This is the struggle meal right now.
I like beanie weenies, but I mean, I'll go for a steak anyway.
Well, ain't nothing wrong with beanie weenies, but I got a choice between beanie weenies and steak and lobster. I'll take it.
We got a couple questions I want to hop into real quick. I really like this one just because I think a lot of people probably don't know the answer to this. Maybe not the most important question, but a very interesting one from Riser for Coach. He says, Coach, can you do a quick breakdown of the coaching duties and how they're split on G-Day? He said, I assume Red and Black have their own broken out coaching staffs for the day, which gives Kirby the chance to evaluate the guys on his own staff in a sense. Who coordinates each side? Who gives halftime speeches? Who's arguing with the refs?
Arguing with the
refs. I like that last part.
I remember Boy Riser. He's the best.
I think in the past they've had situations where you had different play callers for each team. But in this situation, I know that Todd Monken called the plays for both sides because, you know, we do have an intricate offense and it is his baby. And they want to continue to develop the second and third team quarterbacks. And the way you call the plays, it gives you a chance to analyze them a little better as compared to somebody that's not looking at what the quarterback's doing is calling the play. And we certainly got guys that are capable of that. Now, whether she called the plays for the red defense, I don't know, or whether Lanning did, but play calling was pretty basic in this game. We did a lot of formations and a few blitzes. But then as far as designation, though, I think Lanning was the head coach for the Black and Monken for the red team, and then probably at halftime they did that, but Kirby probably went in there butt too, so you never know. But his main deal was to get the thing rolling and keep it going. I like that rolling clock, you know, still lasted a long time, but as far as chewing on the refs, I don't think there's much of that.
It was Matt Luke. I'm just gonna tell you, Matt Luke was he was into the game. Yeah, that dude is a competitor. He was down there on the black squad, and Jamil Adai was over there, and they were really chewing on the refs, but they wanted to win that game. You know, they want some steak and lobster as well. So it wasn't I know that, as Coach pointed out, a lot of times you are doing specific play calls and specific scenarios in order to test your team, give them experience with something. You're using that. You're not just there to put on a show for the fans, but those coaches are very competitive in that situation. And I saw Matt Luke. He took it seriously. When the red team would score, he was not happy about it. You know, when his black team did something well, he and Coach Adai were all over it. So
that's good.
Yeah. I'm just saying, because they were right in front of me, and I just saw him. It looked like he was taking on Mississippi State. he was into it. So I like the passion for what is essentially a glorified practice.
You know, in the past, every coaching staff, they usually set up the spring game, and they have, you know, even put the different secretaries with each team to, you know, put up their scripts and things like that, and then strength coaches, trainers, managers. And, you know, they would make scouting reports on the other team and put bad pictures of them up on the board. You know, the guy used to get sand picked in his face at the beach. I'm each other up. It's fun. But the best spring game story I can ever tell you is we were at Missouri, and we had a very distinct ruling that nobody was going to – everybody have, you know, one defense – and one coverage and one formation and just three or four plays and a couple passes. And then we're going to be basic as we could, because we're playing Illinois in the first game the next year. And they had just won the Rose Bowl, and we were trying to be really, you know, we were doing some different things than we did the year before. So we had this one guy who was our strength coach on our team. And I was head coach of one team. And after the first play, he comes running up to me. I got their signals. I got their signals. What do you mean? See, I'm watching the door for the defensive guy. I got their signals. I said, "Red man, they only run in one defense." I figured.
I love it.
I could listen to coach stories all day long.
Hi, Jake. Hit us up with the other question.
Well, a lot of talk, obviously, about AD Mitchell. Coach, this one for you, B Butcher 19 says, Mitchell clearly raised some eyebrows in spring practice and had an impressive G-Day. How much of that do you think is due to him being ready to play versus Munkin scheming the X receiver into one-on-one opportunities?
Good question.
I think it's three things. Number one, he's taking advantage of an opportunity where Burton's out, Rosemary St. Jacks is out, and then even Arian Smith was out. So he took advantage. He knew what to do with it, and he used took advantage of those reps. Plus, he's going against, you know, Kimber did some good things, but, you know, he took advantage of that too. So I think it was just a case of all three of them, really. I mean, if he – is playing next year in a really good role, we will really be good, because he's going to have to beat out three guys. He's going to have to beat out three guys to play that position. Now, maybe he can move in, but we're in good shape with him right now, all the reps that he got. But at this point, with his speed, and then we didn't get to see Robinson, who does the same thing as he does, almost exactly the same type of player. Robinson can do that too. So we're in good shape there.
But to the part of the question there about how much does that scheme open up that position? Because it seems that I have – is burned in my brain. That's my point. Last year, it just seemed like he was open all the damn time.
George Pickens, I mean, it's the same thing. Yeah. I mean, if they're not going to double cover you, that's the easiest place to throw it to. Short side of the field, one-on-one. Back shoulder, throw it in the hole if they're playing cover two. If they're laying off of you, run the slant. If they're bailing, run the hitch. I mean, but the guy's got to know what to do, and you got a quarterback that can read it. So it's definitely – I'm not trying to be a smarty pants here, but
no, it's basically it. I'm just trying to make sure that the guy had the answer. because it seemed to me like he schemed it open all the time.
Hardest place to throw the ball is the outside receiver strong because of the hash marks are tighter in college. And, I mean, you know, it's longer throw. Kyaris Jackson catches a lot more passes when he's in a spot than when he's the outside receiver three.
All right. And Kyaris had a nice little catch on Saturday.
Yeah. I think we talk about the receivers, we forget about Kyaris. Kyaris is going to be a bad, bad man. Anyway, guys, that's all.
Big time throwing that's left.
That's all the time we have for this week's show, folks. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday. We will have a lot more to talk about. Of course, if you get a chance, swing by our friends here at Classic City Eats. It's a fantastic place. You really enjoy it. Our swing by Academia Brewing Company this week. They've got live music twice this week, plus Trivia Tuesdays. Be sure to go by the Athens Ford website, their Facebook page, and get ready for the Meet the Broncos event. Of course, if you need anything from our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors, hit them up. You can chat with them online. It's completely free. They will give you an estimate. There's nothing to it. And of course, don't forget our friend Ronnie Brown down at DNR Construction Maintenance. It's DR Construction Maintenance. Check them up if you're down in the Liberty County, Long County, or Bryan County areas. If you need some stuff, it's spring. I'm sure that you have some projects you were putting off until this spring. You're doing some spring cleaning, which always leads you to find something else you need to do. If you need somebody who can come out, if the job is bigger than what you can do or what your friends can do, or your uncle who says he can do it, but you know he can't, bring in the professionals, bring in DR Construction Maintenance and let them help you out.
And that's the good running round.
Yeah, exactly.
I got a question for all of you guys just to end this up.
Okay.
What does AHBL stand for?
AHBL? The PG-13 version or the AHBL?
We're going to go, and I'm going to give you a deal. Juiced.
I'm sorry?
What? Yeah, you cut out.
June 1st.
All hell breaks loose.
Yep. Yeah. It's recruiting.
I was trying to come up with recruiting.
Trust me, I'm already sweating it over here. I'm already feeling it.
Isn't that a good symbol on June 1st?
And I want to announce my Kickstarter GoFundMe to put Roddy on vacation for 2 months for June and July.
I'd like to announce my vacation starting June 1st. Also,
if the fans want Georgia to get a bunch of commits during that time, I'll be happy to take a vacation for the team.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll take one for the team.
Every time you're gone, something good happens.
Yeah. All right, folks. We'll see you next Tuesday at noon. We appreciate you tuning in. If you would, give us a chance. Be sure to subscribe to this YouTube channel. It would mean the world to us. We appreciate it. Take care.